I got to take a risk that people that are just buried in these college loans don't get to take. And so the socioeconomic impact of coming to a company that feels smaller or riskier, we have to get those thinkers in the buildings.
Welcome to the Women on the Move podcast from JPMorgan Chase. I'm Sam Saperstein. Women on the Move is a global initiative designed to empower female employees, clients, and consumers to build their careers, grow their businesses, and improve their financial health. Each episode will feature successful and inspiring women who are breaking the mold. They're sharing their career journeys and leadership lessons, talking about their professional and personal goals, and making a difference in the lives of others. This season, I'm taking you to the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where I caught up with many of the women who inspire me every day. Today's guest is at the forefront of social media. She's super plugged in, and she's helping me stay relevant to my kids. Jeremy Gorman took a leap of faith when she signed on as Snap's chief business officer after a successful career at Amazon. Since joining Snap, she's focused on Gen Z, using her expertise in sales and advertising to redefine Snapchat's purpose. Jeremy is keeping the company focused on new trends without sacrificing user privacy. Here's my conversation with Jeremy during her first visit to Davos. I hope you enjoy it. So Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us here.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here.
So you've had a really interesting career at some of the most well-known tech companies of our time. So I want to start there with you. Tell us about the evolution of your career and your stints at Amazon and now at Snap.
Sure. Yeah, happy to. I feel very fortunate to have been at the market-leading places at the times in which they were market-leading and kind of watched every manifestation of tech, really. 1999, when I graduated from college, was really kind of the first year that the internet was being monetized.
Yes,
and
yes.
So it was really interesting juxtaposition between my graduating class and the one before me. The one before me, the internet was sort of a fad. And if you went and worked for a tech company, it was a little bit like, are those things going to last? Like, what's the web for? And by the time I graduated, it was very much like, we need to monetize this. And so I worked for a small startup company called JobTrack that got bought by Monster.com. Mm. Very shortly after I started. And so I was immediately in big tech. Monster was one of the largest sites on the web at the time, and I was responsible for collegiate marketing. From there, had a small stint at Variety magazine, which was my first sales job. So I was on the marketing side of the business, buying media. And then I was like, well, I could probably sell media. Let's see how it goes. And did that, which was really interesting, very different. So coming from a tech-native platform to one that was a 100-year-old newspaper, where I was really the person in the building saying, you know, we need to break stories online and these kinds of things. And there was a push-pull there at that time to say, but the integrity of our paper in the morning will be impacted if we break stories online. And super interesting period, about brief. I was there about 2 years and then went to Yahoo when it was the biggest thing in the world and still actually remains enormous, even though people talk about it very differently. And I think being there was really extraordinary. I was there through 5 different CEOs, so kind of during that period.
That in and of itself is amazing.
Yeah. So I learned a lot about change management during that period of time, both internally as well as with my peer set. And then I was actually not looking to leave Yahoo. It was really fun, but got a call from Amazon, and they had just sort of decided that they wanted to go into the advertising business. And this was probably the biggest risk at the time I had taken in my career because it was very small relative to Yahoo, which is hard to believe now, but nonetheless.
Right, at that point.
And so I said no 3 times and then had the woman who was running it at the time called me. And I think, you know, as a woman, as a person, I always look for where did you get the best advice. And this woman who was running the organization called me and said, you don't have to come here, but you can't stay there. And I said, why? And she responded and said, because you're growing and it's not. And at some point, those things will be in conflict with each other. And
wise. That is unbelievable.
So
was this a person you knew well?
No, I didn't know. I'd met her through the interview process. And she was running the Amazon advertising business at the time. And so I thought, I want to work for somebody who will talk to me that way.
That is incredible. And so that then you went to work for...
Yeah, like in that phone call, I was like, okay, let's go. And she's like,
oh,
that's actually not what I meant. Like,
that is
I was
so
like,
funny.
Well, is the offer still here?
Yeah.
So I went and I thought it was incredible advice. And learned an extraordinary amount at a company like that, helping to build the organization.
Yeah, from the ground level.
Yeah, that was an awesome team and really smart people, of course. And then you put the Amazon values on top of it and the efficiencies of a company like that to build an advertising business. We were able to grow it really, really big really quickly, which is exciting. And then similarly, I was not looking for a job, but I got a phone call from Snap on a Thursday. This part's, every time I say it, I feel like a crazy person, but I got a call from Snap on a Thursday that said, hey, we keep hearing your name in this job search. Will you come meet with Evan Spiegel? Mm. And my advice is always, if you get a call like that, you just say yes, because why not meet a smart, amazing founder? And I met him and was just totally struck by his innovation, wise beyond his years, how important Snapchat is as a way for the youth to communicate, Gen Z and millennials. And I was so inspired in the conversation that the next day we decided, like, we should work together. That was great. And then the next day I signed the offer. The next day I resigned. The next day I left because it was a competitive situation. And then the next day I started.
So
all
day
less
six?
Than a week. Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
Crazy.
What's amazing about that is you were called on both of these accounts to go into those next roles because presumably you really built a great reputation in the business. They were coming for you, right? They knew who you were, which is great. And that you were open-minded to take those calls.
Yeah. I mean, there are many I haven't taken. And I think in every version of everybody's life story, there are those sliding doors moments where it's like, oh, what if I had said yes to that? And I think particularly given I've been doing this for 20 years, you know, I think everybody has a story of, man,
the one
Facebook
that got away
me
possibly
day one, you know, like, shoot. But I can't, I mean, the choices that I have made have been really great. I feel
terrific.
Really fortunate. And then in hindsight, it's even more interesting to be like, you know, Monster's at the top of its game, and then now it's been disrupted. And
right.
Variety, top of its game, disrupted or changed anyway, at least a lot more digital now. Yahoo, top of its game, disrupted. And so it gives me, I think, a really unique perspective that nothing is guaranteed to be forever.
Right, which is when you think something is like the standard or the best, right?
Yeah,
no one's ever going to
disrupt
it.
You couldn't imagine a world where Yahoo wasn't the homepage to the internet.
Definitely not.
Like,
right.
It's crazy. And I mean, it's still my homepage, by the way, to the internet. It's how I get my news. So
fair
I'm
enough.
A loyalist
Loyally.
Through and through,
Loyalty.
For sure.
So you're riding these waves, right? And you're finding the next opportunity. And so now you're at Snap. So talk about your role here and what you're trying to do for the company at a really critical time.
So I'm the chief business officer. I'm responsible for the revenue side of the organization. So the sales teams, sales operations teams, revenue strategy teams. And then interestingly, I'm also responsible for a lot of our customer operations. So our content review, our ad review teams, our customer service teams, our business operations teams, trust and safety. And so it's part of why I wanted the job actually was
really
to kind
so
of
many different pieces.
So many different pieces.
Yeah.
And I'd been in ad sales or on the other side of ad sales for 20 years. And so having the opportunity to learn all of these other functions, which has been extraordinary, was kind of the opportunity of a lifetime.
Yes.
And I think one of the things I'm learning is that there's no way I'm going to be an expert in all of those things. So I just have to figure out how to help the people I need to help from my position in the best possible way I can. Like, we kind of think of it as servant leadership, for lack of better terms, is like, I'm not going to be the foremost authority on what is the appropriate content in Saudi Arabia, but I need to know how to support the person whose job that is. And that means getting them the right resources and the right funding and the right tooling and these kinds of things. And that's where I can add value, but they are the experts. You know, our product team is extraordinary. They don't need me to come in and help them innovate. They are the most innovative people in the world.
When you think about privacy and safety, what are you thinking about doing? You know, how are you thinking about protecting those things for your users? And what more do you think is needed to be done in these areas?
This is my favorite topic because I find that very few people know this about Snapchat, but Snapchat has been private by design since the very beginning. So we have an extraordinary product team, and they built the communication tools to be sort of like we're having a conversation right now, although without the headphones. All friendships are bilateral. There is no notion of following somebody unless there are accounts for celebrities and these kinds of things. But regular people, you can't just follow. I mean, you have to say, I want you to be my friend. You have to be my friend. There's no notion of virality. So I can't tag you in something and make it go viral. It's not broadcast. It's like more one-to-one mm-hmm. or one-to-few communication. Mm-hmm. There's never been likes or comments. So yeah. to see the other publishers coming around to that side, I think is mm-hmm. wonderful they are now. For society. Yeah. And I think something that for us, we have 3.5 billion pictures taken every single day with our camera.
Oh my goodness.
Billion. Crazy.
Wow.
Crazy. And I think part of the reason for that is because people feel comfortable on the app because they know that it's private, that it's just their friends, that it's not going to go crazy. If you take a screenshot, it tells you that somebody took a screenshot. Little things like you are represented by your Bitmoji. It's a cartoon version of yourself, effectively, in your profile, not your own picture. And so you can't just go look for, you know, 15-year-old girls named Alexis in Phoenix and
not
find them.
Yeah.
Everybody looks like a cartoon.
Right,
so
right.
it's like that keeps the community really
layer.
Safe, too.
Yeah.
And you have to know somebody's username to add them or scan their code one-to-one. So there's a lot of these things just built in that's so exciting to see everybody else kind of come around to these worlds that is keeping people much more safe.
It's a completely different approach.
Yeah, totally. And I think we were, you know, lambasted for a little while. Like, why wouldn't you want this earned media of all these extra things? Or why can't I measure when we get purchased for by my media buyers, for instance? They'll be like, how much earned media did I get? Which is fine, fair, and I understand why that's important. But our answer is like, one, we're not going to tell you, and two, not very much, and that's on purpose.
Yeah,
and because we don't want it to go to 5,000 other people. We want you to feel comfortable being a weirdo dancer in your living
or
room and
you
making
do.
Faces and putting dog ears on and just having a great time.
So it's interesting that you have the sales and advertising responsibility and safety and privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And can oversee both. You know, what kind of interesting opportunities does that offer you? And how do you have to keep those two areas separate so you make sure you're doing the right thing for each?
This is another one in the hiring world, particularly because I didn't have the trust and safety type experience before. Actually, I didn't hire anybody. They were all there already. But some really extraordinary leaders who have done this at scale at companies like Accenture, for instance. We have law enforcement operations that have been with us and then with a lot of our other social media platforms that are very, very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say in my world, one of the things that's really interesting is that because I am responsible for both functions, I have to make choices every single day. And I think the easiest way to say that is, what would the Snapchatter want in this moment in time? What would a 15-year-old girl want in this scenario? What would a 23-year-old male want in this scenario and in all the countries in the world?
Mm-hmm.
And then we have those experts as well, thank goodness, because the variability
there
is extraordinary. And so I really like the structure this way. I think it's really, really cool because I used to fight what is now my current self.
Right.
To be like, accept the ad. What is wrong with you?
Exactly. So you can resolve things quickly, right? Doing the both of them. But presumably you will take into account all those risks before you go out there with something.
And we will always err on the side of the Snapchatter.
And so focusing on the Gen Z demographic and particularly their buying behaviors of the future, what does that open up for you in terms of focusing on that particular demographic? And how are you thinking about also, as we sort of mentioned, challenges or ways that you have to control for things?
One of the things where we're really fortunate is that we very squarely sit in a generation where people are forming lifelong habits. And I don't think it's new marketing. It's interesting in that, you know, Snapchat's new-ish and some of these other platforms are new-ish. But if you actually rewind time, like I graduated from college in 99, as I mentioned, from 95 to 99 at UCLA, I would walk down the corridor and it would be, you know, sign up for this credit card and get a free UCLA t-shirt and do this whatever and get this insurance and join this. We were a Coke campus, not a Pepsi campus, a Taco Bell, not a McDonald's campus, an Adidas campus, not a Nike campus.
So these brands were there.
They were there.
Trying to influence you.
And now a lot of that is not allowed on college campuses anymore. But the human behavior hasn't changed, which is all of these switching moments in your life. There are very, very few of them, really. You know, it's when you move out of your parents' house. It's when you graduate from college. typically when you get your first home, when you get married, and when you have a baby, like, that's it. Those are the times when you can switch your allegiance or build an allegiance. And we have almost all of those moments in the generation that we serve. And so I think we need to be bigger and better about proclaiming that message to our marketing partners. And then beyond that, the household influence that this generation has, independent of brands, but just generally speaking, is extraordinary. And they're much better educated on issues. I mean, you look here around Davos and see these young people just
so passionate,
making a huge difference. And so if you kind of just distill that down to what it means to a marketer, then it's, Mom, your phone's so old. That's so embarrassing. Can you please just get a new phone? That's an $1,000 influencer. Like,
Right,
Apple or Samsung or whatever it is.
So personal.
In the household.
Yeah.
Or if you have an Xbox or a PlayStation, the parent is not choosing which one. The kid is choosing which one.
Yep.
And so kind of harnessing that power.
So I want to understand some of the work that you do internally to help women. So your female employees. I think you're a member of the Lady Chillas.
Yes, the Lady Chillas. Chilla is the name of our ghost. His name is Ghost Face Chilla.
So what do the Lady Chillas do, and how are you involved with them?
It's a group that's worldwide, women supporting women. It's a fully voluntary thing. You don't have to be in the group if you don't want to, but we have an opportunity to kind of have our own space, talk about things that have impacted our particular work or our particular career, or get advice. And it's interesting, in my role, I sort of participate in different ways. So I think there are rooms that people don't want me in. They want to talk amongst their peer set. And so I have to kind of pick my moments to say, actually, like, how can I help you?
Yeah.
And I found that people are so willing to help me too. It's hard sometimes, even though our executive team is half and half, which is awesome.
That's
amazing C-level peers that are women, and we have our own dialogue, and the men are incredibly supportive. So very, very lucky. But I feel in the Lady Chillas environments, and so we'll have like an hour long where you can sit down, everybody sits on the floor, and everybody talks about anything from like what's a book that inspired you to what scared you. There's a person that sort of is the
facilitator.
Exactly. And so if the conversation's not moving, they'll kind of do that, like, what's a book that inspired you and why? And then sometimes I go in there and people just pepper me with questions. Were you ever scared? And how did you get to where you are? And these kinds of things. And it feels amazing to be able to do like a one-to-many in that regard, to help people understand like these jobs are not impossible to get.
Yeah.
And I didn't actually do anything special. Like, I just worked my ass off. I made good connections. Always put my customers ahead of myself. Always put our audiences first, no matter what company I was in. And to your point, like, built a reputation where I'm very hireable. But I think it's actually cooler that I didn't, you know, I don't have a Harvard MBA. Like, these kinds of things where I don't feel, I don't think, impossible. And I think that part's really cool.
Very cool. And I think it really helps people say, that's an accessible leader. And I can see myself doing that, which is so important. So the top of the house looks great from a diversity perspective.
Yeah.
What's the rest of the company like in terms of representation and also inclusion, right? Are people really getting their thoughts and opinions valued and feel like they have a seat at the table?
I think one of the joys of having a 3,000-person company is that you're heard whether you want to be or not.
There's only so many people around.
There's only so many people around. And of course, like, for me, having come from these behemoths before, like,
this feels small.
Yeah, like, literally. And our primary mode of communication internally is Snapchat. So it's like 2 seconds.
Wow.
You know, for
small
to be heard.
And immediate.
So yes, I would say that culturally, the to be heard is pretty available at any minute. Evan is like, just send me an email and I'll get back to you. And none of us ever put out of office messages on, which, by the way, is really stressful right now because we're very time shifted.
Because here you are.
But I think it's the right message, which is like, I'm not gone. I'm just like, need a little bit of delay before I get back to you. So accessibility for sure. And then I think people are feeling heard. We also have hired an incredible VP of D&I named Una King. She came from Google, but prior to which she was in Parliament in the UK and working on these issues. So she's amazing and is infusing a lot of different thinking into the company beyond just gender and race. So one of my personal passion points and one of her initiatives she's helping me with is figuring out how to get more socioeconomic diversity, in, not only in the company, but in tech in general. I think of my position when I graduated from college, I was in a good position that my parents were able to help me with college. And so I didn't have loans, but the job I was offered at Monster paid $21,000 a year, and I was also offered your standard management consultant job from all the big five firms that paid twice as much as that. And I worry that had my parents not paid for college, which I thank them for every minute, I would have chosen an alternative path. And that probably would have been a perfectly good path too. And it was for a lot of my friends. But I got to take a risk that people that are just buried in these college loans don't get to take. And so the socioeconomic impact of coming to a company that feels smaller or riskier or tech is confusing or whatever, we have to get those thinkers in the building. So that's one of our huge initiatives. It's everywhere in the building. And you know, on my team, we're about 50-50. So yeah, across the board, which is awesome.
Super exciting. Yeah. So you were involved in the reorganization of the sales team back in April. And during the second quarter sales call, predicted that while that might be disruptive in the short term, it would have very long-term benefits. So when you're thinking about something that will definitely impact employees that way, how are you communicating that to employees and thinking about their morale and making sure that they're with you as you really implement something the company needs to do?
I think it's the hardest thing to do and the easiest thing to screw up. In this particular case, we over-communicated the why, and I think that was really important. One of the things that I had sort of said to myself before I even started was, like, I'm going to just listen for the first 30 days and then formulate a plan in the next 30 days and then act the next 30 days. And ultimately what happened was that during the listening period, it became very clear that what I had already hypothesized around the verticalization of the sales team and breaking into certain segments was something that the team was sort of yearning for too, but nobody had pulled the trigger because they thought that it was going to be too disruptive to client relationships for everybody to change from a regional model to a vertical model at the same time. So I did more listening with the advertisers and was like, do you wish that somebody was more of an expert in your field and, you know, whatever it is, financial services, automotive, entertainment? And they did. And so it was like between those two things, it actually only took about 2 weeks to make the decision. And that was very stressful because I was new and you're right. Like,
and a big decision.
People love their clients in the best possible way. And so it's like, because we were regionally based before, imagine the same person had Target and McDonald's, both of whom are amazing partners of ours, and that same person is beloved by both of them, and they love their clients equally, and we're like, you have to choose, because you can't be on the retail team and the restaurants team,
because
we need to level up our expertise in both, and therefore you have to pick a lane. That was hard for people, but giving those choices where we could, obviously you can't all the time, was really, really helpful. And so everybody really came along that journey. And then fortunately, you know, for a litany of reasons, not just this one, but as you've probably seen in our earnings reports, revenue turned around pretty quickly. And so that's nice.
Okay, so here's a personal question for you. You know, we talked a little bit about taking risks in the beginning.
Yeah.
You talked about your career. But I understand you have a thrill-seeking nature to you. So tell us, what are some of the craziest things you've done in the past to seek some thrills?
So I think that it's just like the most measured thrill-seeking possible answer is that I knew always that I would be very corporate. And so, and I love adventure and I like fast cars and fast boats and all these things. And so I was like, okay, I will always deliberately do something insane so that
to balance out
my other stuff. So I don't even know if that counts as crazy if you're like deliberately planning it. But nonetheless, craziest thing I've ever done was in Rio, I went hang gliding and landed on Copacabana Beach.
When you do these things, are you even afraid as you approach them, like what's going to happen here? Or are you just thinking, I'm just going to do this, I'll ask questions later?
I'm afraid in the way that you want to be, right?
Yeah.
Like that adrenaline, that version of like, oh my gosh, I can kind of do anything. And I think that's the same type of behavior when, you know, I jumped from a company like Amazon to, which at the moment in time was the largest company in the world,
and
now obviously top three, and to say like, I'm going to do this because it feels right, like that, it's actually the exact same,
feeling.
Like of like, oh my God, what am I doing? I hope this works out. And luckily my gut now for different job changes, which isn't that many in a 21-year career, has worked out. And so it's that same feeling where I know, like, I can do anything.
It's going to be okay.
So I think they're actually interrelated.
Well, I can't wait to hear what you do next. This is so exciting. Thank you so much for being with us. It's
been
great to hear about your career and to learn the lessons that you've learned.
My pleasure.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to Jeremy Gorman for taking the time to speak with me about her work at Snap and for talking about the value of taking risks in and out of the office. Thank you for joining us today. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. Thank you to our partners at the Female Quotient and Magnet Media for helping us tell these stories. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein.